session number 21645, rule 1.
Stu?
John Maul, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
East Bergholt.
Which year?
In Suffolk.
Which year was this?
1923.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in East Suffolk?
No, I didn't. My father took the whole family off to New Zealand when I was 2, as he was offered a job in Wellington, and it actually proved to be rather unsuccessful. When we got there, we found there was an awful lot of unemployment, and it didn't really work out at all. And after quite a number of years, I suppose it must be about 10 years, we all trooped home again. And it rather disrupted my education, because obviously I was just right in sort of in the middle of doing it all when off we trundled back home. So I was a bit backward in getting to another school when I got home. I missed going to a family public school, which was Tunbridge, which all my family had been to. And I had a crammer. I went to a private tutor's in Bournemouth. And then I was there until I was 15, I suppose it was. Or was it 14? 15, I think. And then the war literally started then in September. And I'd had enough of this crammer, and I wasn't getting on off the world one thing or another, and I was hopeless at the examinations. So I literally sort of virtually ran away to sea. Jumped on a train, went to Southampton, joined the Navy for 12 years as a boy. And I went home and told my parents I'd joined the Navy. They had a shock of their life. But that was in 39. And I went over to the Isle of Man to HMS St. George, which was a naval training establishment there. And I was there for getting off for 3 years, I suppose.
What happened to you there?
I joined the signals. I was a boy signalman. And when I was just 18, I was drafted overseas, went over in convoy in a big trooper called the Athlone Castle, I think it was.
Before you take us any further, yeah, are there any details about the Isle of Man experience that we should record?
No, I found it extremely interesting, the signals, I must admit. And I was really quite good at especially reading flags on going up the mastheads. I'm quite good at that, and in fact I was chosen to be the captain of the team when we used to have competitions against other classes and things. And my semaphore was excellent as well, which was good fun. Morse we didn't get too involved in. There we learned, of course, and did the Morse code. It, that was they were the telegraphists, and we were the signalmen, or bunting tossers, as we were called. And I moved from two camps, actually. We had started off in a disused holiday camp called House Drake, and then moved to St. George's, which was another holiday camp called Cunningham's holiday camp before the war. And, it was an interesting very hard working period, those 3 years, for a youngster just going in and not knowing the first thing about anything and being plunged into the deep end. But I really rather enjoyed it.
What was life like for boy sailors, as it were, on the Isle of Man in the early years of the war?
It wasn't too bad. We had quite a lot of sport, and the food was very good. They gave us a lot of very substantial good food because we were still growing up. See, we hadn't really achieved manhood. I found the food excellent, actually. And I put on an enormous amount of weight, and I suppose just literally grew up from then on. And we used to get quite a bit of leave. We used to, not back to the mainland, but we used to be allowed around the island quite a lot. And the only thing we were ever allowed to send home were Manx kippers, which were very much in demand in England, and they're very popular out there, of course. And I used to send a lot of kippers home to friends and relations. And they were very sought after, I think. And, on the whole, it was an interesting time. I had a lot of friends. One of my greatest chums, who is still very much with us, he served in the same not quite the same class, but almost the same class as myself. And I made a lot of friends who I keep up with, two or three of them now.
Did the Germans attack the island?
No. No, the Isle of Man was very safe. We had a lot of German prisoners of war there. Actually, they were internees from the who'd been living in England or one thing or the other, and they were encamped in sort of quarters all the way along the seafront in Douglas, and they were there virtually the whole war, and all behind fencing. I think we used to wander down into Douglas and see all these people behind their fencing, but they were no trouble, and they just accepted the fact that they were, I suppose, a possible espionage threat could have been. But there was no difficulty with them, I don't think.
You were just about to tell me that after the Isle of Man you went overseas?
Yes, I went in this large convoy. We sailed from Liverpool, and we arrived. We first port of call was Bombay, which I must say I wasn't awfully enamoured with, and we only sort of went ashore for sort of 1 or 2 days there. But one really rather extraordinary coincidence happened there, which I'll tell you if you like.
Please.
It's I'm not quite certain who he was. He was a very senior British diplomatic corps person there, and he threw a party one night for the sailors, and invited us all to his lovely house, and he laid out a sort of dance area in the, on the tennis court, and goodness knows what. And I spotted a rather a gorgeous-looking girl in the corner, you see, so I thought I'd go and ask her to dance, which I did. And she quite naturally asked me where I came from in England, and I told her I was born in a little village called East Burkholt in Suffolk, the Constable country. And she said, so was I. So I couldn't believe this. Anyway, she said, how old are you? So I said, I was 18. And she said, well, so am I. Yeah. And It turned out that she was born on the 19th of April, 1923, and so was I. And our two mothers were in next door beds together in the hospital in East Bergholt, and became great chums. And this girl was absolutely flabbergasted. I can't remember her name or anything about her. And she rushed me over to meet her mum, who was there. And this lady was absolutely knocked out with interest, of course. And we never met again, because we sailed the following morning, and all the dresses and one thing another I had then, of course, were lost when eventually I got sunk. But it was a most extraordinary coincidence, and we were literally twins.
So that was in Bombay.
That was in Bombay, yes. And then we moved. We went from Bombay to eventually, I can't remember where we were. I think we went to. I think the next call was Singapore, and we were actually in Singapore. It was the 14th of February, I think it was, 42, when Singapore fell. But we went ashore. We were in the convoy, and we hastily departed in convoy, and eventually ended up.
Which ship were you in?
I was in a big trooper called the, I think it was the Athlone Castle. Yes, I'm sure it was. A big three funnel.
What did you see
ashore? It was pretty hard going, that. I must say, the food was pretty awful, and it was very cramped on the decks for the troops and things. And packed, absolutely packed, solid. Mostly soldiers, actually, but there was quite a big naval contingent there.
What did you see in Singapore the day before it fell?
Well, there was an enormous panic and action going on, of course, everywhere. But we weren't kept very well informed of what was going on, but we knew it was very, very touch-and-go business. And the Prince of Wales and Repulse, the two famous battleships, had just been sunk. And we were told to get out pretty sharpish. And I think we went to Rangoon, and then from there to Colombo, where I was discharged from the ship in Colombo, and put into a sort of transit camp there for a day or so, until the HMS Cornwall came in, and I was drafted to her and joined the ship in the February, late February of 42.
What impression did the cruiser make on you at first?
Wonderful ship. I was. I can't say more than that. She was a magnificent ship, and we had very good mess accommodation, there was quite a number of boys on board who were under the age of 18. They had their own mess deck, and then the next grade up were ourselves. We were just 18, sort of thing. And it was crowded, but we all slept in hammocks. I slept in a hammock for 9 years, and it was wonderful, very, very comfortable way of sleeping, I must admit. I didn't mind my hammock a bit. And we had a very, quite an airy mess day, because there was no air conditioning and things in those days. But it was a good time. But unfortunately, it only lasted 2 months, because I joined the ship in the February, and of course we were sunk on the 5th of April, 42.
What kind of duties were you given in the ship?
I was a signalman. By then I'd risen to the dizzy height of being a signalman from a boy signalman. I was a boy signalman, then an ordinary signalman, and then I became a signalman, which is a big step up. And I was a signalman in the ship. We were on the flag deck basically all the time. My duties were sort of, when I was on watch, it was with one of the senior, the petty officer or chief petty officer, yeoman of signals, and I was his sort of right-hand man, I suppose. And the chief yeoman of signals, a marvellous man called Sam Langford, he had the most ghastly experience when we were sunk, and he lost both his legs, but we managed to keep him alive in the until we were picked up, and he only died a few years ago, actually. I went out to see, he'd emigrated to Cape Town, no, Durban, sorry, Durban, and I went out to see him with a colleague of mine called Roger Collett, who was a midshipman of the in the Cornwall when I was a signalman, and we kept up all those years. And he and I went out to South Africa to meet as many South African survivors as we could, because 30% of the ship's company of the Cornwall were in fact South Africans, and they were a wonderful bunch too. And we saw quite a few. We had a wonderful trip out there. We went to see Sam Langford. I think we were probably the last two ever to see him. And he was very happily settled in just outside Durban, living with his son. And well, that's diversing a bit, but to go back to the... Sorry.
What was your action station in the ship?
Well, it was on the flag deck. I was very lucky to be above decks, shall we say. I would have loathed to have been below decks during any action, I must say. There's nothing worse than not being able to see what was going on. And it was a very nice action station, actually. But I never forget once, just as we were out somewhere, one of the midshipmen let one of the halyards go from the flag deck, and it shot up the top of the mast, and I was designated to go up and get it, which was quite an experience. I thoroughly enjoyed it, actually. I climbed the mast right up at the top and got hold of this halyard and pulled it down. But sitting, I virtually was sitting up there when we were belting along at about 30-odd knots, probably, and looking down on the ship and its three funnels was an experience I shall never, ever forget. It was quite amazing. And anyway, I brought the halyard down and... it was extraordinary.
Did it give you a sense of vertigo?
Not the slightest. I never got it. Never got vertigo. No. It was the most amazing sensation. And I only wish I'd had a camera with me. But, it's quite extraordinary, because it was pretty high up there. And
what kind of duties did the ship carry out once you'd been drafted to her?
Well, we were part of K-Force, I think it was called, which was under the command of Admiral Sir James Somerville, who flew his flag in HMS Warspite. And we went out the first trip we did was a convoy duty down to Fremantle in Western Australia to take back a lot of Australian troops in convoy who had been overseas for a long time, and we escorted the convoy to, as I say, Fremantle, and we went ashore in Perth and had a wonderful time there, lovely, lovely city. And I had rather an extraordinary experience there. We decided, two of us decided to go to the cinema one night, and we were dashing down the staircase afterwards to go to catch a bus back to the, I don't quite know where, to some depot to catch a train. Oh, yes, that's right, to the train, railway station to catch a train back to Fremantle. And we dashed down the staircase, and I ran straight into a plate glass window, knocked myself clean out, smashed the whole of the front of my face, and I was in an absolute terrible state. The whole of my eyes went completely black. Anyway, my chum helped me back, and I got back on the ship and was looked after by the surgeon. But it took the next day, my other eye had sort of sympathetically gone black as well, so I looked like a panda. I never seen like it. And I was given light duties for a while, but it was very, very unpleasant, I must say. And soon after that, I was sleeping on top of a metal locker quite high up, and we were going into Fremantle, and we went across the bar in Fremantle, and the ship rolled, and I fell off this locker. It was a three-tier locker, and one of the doors was open, and as I went down, I caught my left eye on the jagged bit of door and tore that all open, which didn't help at all, and the surgeon sewed me up. And then and eventually got better, but again, it was rather a nasty experience. But after we'd left the troops in Fremantle, we went back to Colombo, and we're just doing light duties around about that area, knowing full well that the Japanese fleet were not too far away. And we were all on this occasion given shore leave, and we were all shore in the various bars and cabarets and cinemas, goodness knows what. And then suddenly there was a tannoy convoy of vehicles going round Colombo, telling all members of the ship's companies of HMS Cornwall and HMS Dorsetshire to repair back to the ship immediately. And which I heard. Off we dashed back to the ship, and we sailed within a very short time, and I think only one member of the ship's company of Cornwall didn't make it, and that was the Master of Arms, Master of Arms, most extraordinary. And we sailed there and then rushed out of Colombo Harbour in convoy with the Dorsetshire, And we didn't realize at the time, but we were going out virtually as a sort of decoy to the main fleet that were searching for the Japanese main fleet. We were sort of a decoy to distract the Japanese to away from our ships. And that was on the, we sailed on the Saturday. It was Easter, and it was Easter Saturday we sailed. And the following afternoon at 2 o'clock on the button virtually, we were attacked by Japanese dive bombers, Zero dive bombers. They flew straight at us out of the sun. I think I'm right in saying of about 70 aircraft. Some attacked the Dorsetshire and the others attacked us. We were about 2 miles apart. Dorsetshire was ahead of us, I think, by about 2 miles. And we were very badly hit. I think we had 40 direct hits. And we went down in about 20 minutes. And Dorsetshire caught fire. We didn't luckily catch fire. She caught fire and she lost, I think, more casualties. We had more casualties than we did. But we lost about 300 odd.
What could you see of the action from where you were?
Well, a lot. Being on the upper deck, on the flag deck, we could see everything going on. And these Zeros dive straight out of the sun at us. And we, in those days, had no radar. Dorsetshire, I believe, had radar, but it was only in its infancy. And we had none at all. And they just blasted us, literally. We managed to get a few shots away with the pom-poms and things like that. But nothing of any consequence at all. And they just literally blew us out of the water.
Were they using bombs or torpedoes? Or?
No, bombs. They bombed us. They were mostly all oil bombs, and they're very unpleasant because the spraying oil when they burst, it did a lot of damage. I was quite severely wounded in my legs because though we had anti-flash gear over our heads and our hoods and everything else we had, we didn't protect ourselves the same as they do in this day and age. I was in a pair of overalls, I think, and sort of sandals or slippers or something like that. And I got rather badly burnt round the ankles. And
was that from oil?
Yeah. It was the spraying burning hot oil sort of thing. But the bridge itself was strafed, and the chief yeoman, as I said earlier on, he was very, very badly injured, and I think he was the only person who got out alive from that actual area. The navigator was killed. The captain was all right, but we were on the deck below, and my great chum, John Cotton, who I joined up with, and we joined the Cornwall together, everybody knew him as Ping Cotton, P-I-N-G, because he used to bounce around all over the place. And Ping and I were on the flag deck, and I noticed I couldn't make out what he was doing, and he was crawling around. And I said, "What on earth are you doing?" He said, and he was collecting as many cap tallies as he could find, HMS Cornwall cap tallies, and stuffing them in his pocket.
What's a cap tally?
A cap tally is the name of the ship. We went round the sailors' hats, you know. And he took me as mementos to take jump over the side with us.
This was during the action?
Yeah, absolutely during the action. And but there was nothing we could do. We had no method of